He's in a wee bit of a snit.
He's a man of deep zombie takeout.
What else is new?
Welcome to episode 275 of Zombie Takeout. The B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, a little bit of listener submitted. This is from Matt Goranson on Facebook in reference to the trailer for this week's movie. He said, does this movie count as a romantic comedy? I believe it does.
And I think so.
My response at the time was that it's been, you know, probably close to 30 years since I've seen it. So I'm kind of, I don't remember, but I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what he's talking about. Spock and Kirk?
Yeah, if he's talking about Spock and Kirk, yeah. Hell yes.
Yeah. I would say definitely. And a little bit of news. I wasn't going to mention this, but you encouraged me to do so. Now, this has been ongoing for a while. Fully Cooly, FLCL, not just my favorite anime, but my favorite thing ever created, is getting a sequel. It's been in the works for a while. Production IG, who originally produced it, bought it back, and they've been talking about doing something with it. Now, today it was announced it's getting 12 new episodes split into two seasons, which is hilarious since the original was only 6 episodes.
Right.
And it's not going to involve a couple of the main characters. It's one character moving on to a new situation with a new character. I'm being very vague because probably maybe two of you have seen it and I don't want to have to
people will see it though with it coming back.
Yeah. And I don't want to have to explain everything because
sure.
Those of you who do know that it's notoriously weird.
My point was about Mystery Science Theater was how the time we live in, if something has even a small audience,
yeah.
It can get made somewhere.
Oh, true, but this wasn't even like a crowdfunded deal, like how many people want to see it.
Exactly.
This is just the production company getting the rights again and saying, fuck, we're doing a sequel.
Yeah, I mean, people are just screaming for new ideas, we say, as how the umpteenth Superman Batman movies being released this weekend.
And I'm incredibly skeptical but also extremely excited for this. Obviously I don't know if it can live up to the original. I'm happy it's in the hands of the original creators, not some American production company. If it had been some American remake, I would have despised it, of course, as I have all of the other anime remakes, you know, Americanized anime remakes. But it's Fully Cooly. I can't wait to see what they do.
I think we're starting to enter the time where people can, you know, let go, like a sequel, something made down the road doesn't necessarily affect an original movie, you know? We're starting to finally get it. Yeah. Like, the prequels were really, really tough for people.
Yeah.
But the whole concept of you ruined my childhood because you put something out now, we're starting to finally grow beyond that mentality.
Right. And Star Wars is a very different thing because, you know, for our generation, it was our childhood.
Of course.
You know, but so there's a certain emotional attachment that I don't even have to Fully Cooly as much as I adore it because I didn't even see it until I think like 2009, 2010.
But I mean, the thing is, it wasn't just made for us, it was made for our age group that we're no longer in.
Right. And that was what J.J. Abrams realized because he made something for the age group we're in now.
Yeah.
You know, he understood that, you know, that's what we wanted from the prequels.
Right.
Whereas Lucas was just doing what he did the first time.
Right.
Yeah, we won't get into the how well he did that.
We're not in that age group.
Yeah, fair enough. But one more quick note about Fully Cooly. If you're in the U.S., it's on Hulu. I highly recommend it. Obviously, watch the dubbed version. They westernize a couple of the references, and it really helps a couple of the jokes land better. If you're out of the U.S., you can find it on YouTube. Again, I recommend watching it in English. All right, so on to this week's movie, which is from 1986, Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Transparent Aluminum, coming soon to a Crystal Pepsi can near you.
And also brought to you by Colorful Metaphors. You really need to have a knack for them, or you'll get a double dumbass. So one of my titles for this, of course, was Star Trek The Road Movie, and they really did go play all the road movie cards.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there was... Alright, so the plot is they are about to go home and face the music for the crimes they have committed, blowing up, stealing the Enterprise, right. Blowing up the Enterprise. It's why it does really run well into the other two movies.
I was thinking about this the other day. It is really, and I had to see them all to understand this, of a very, very tight trilogy.
Like, I don't think I got that until I rewatched them years later, but just how tightly knit the 2, 3, and 4 were.
And it goes without saying they shouldn't have done TMP. They should have started with Khan. But I think if they had even ended after this one, it would have been even better. And just had this trilogy of Star Trek movies.
Honestly, I think I still like 5 better than this one. But
we'll see when we get to them what I think of the other two, because I haven't seen them in a long time.
But, so in the middle of that, though, of course, the Federation, well, Earth in particular, falls under attack to this probe.
Well, attack isn't exactly the right word, because they established that it's not really a deliberate attack.
Yeah, it was a misunderstanding. But however, it's just like Godzilla, we're in San Francisco, and there's an electronic pulse attack happens. And, worse than that, it's vaporizing the oceans, and it's making it rain like hell.
Yeah.
Now, they, in an amazing amount of time, they figure out what this thing is looking for and what they need to do to get it.
It's one of those moments when Kirk is just an absolute genius for no apparent reason.
Well, Spock, too.
Was it Spock? Who suggested putting it, filtering it so that it would sound like it would underwater?
Well, they deduced that because it was aiming at the ocean immediately.
Oh, okay.
Which, I guess you could figure that out.
Yeah.
And then Spock figures out exactly what it is. In fact, even before he went to the computer, he was saying, I fear they're not going to get their response.
Yeah.
So, like, he had it all figured out before he even went to the computer.
Well, it was kind of obvious if you've ever heard what it sounded like. The real thing, you know?
Well, true. True. And I think I would hate this movie because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Except we remember what happened in the first one where it took too goddamn long to solve the mystery.
Yeah, true.
When you have over like an hour and a half of, it's fucking Voyager, man. It's Voyager, not V'ger. It's just a couple letters are missing, damn it. So to have all of this happen in just a half hour's time, really, just a half hour's time, you know, we got to get whales. We got to go back in time to get whales. And bring them back here somehow to communicate with this thing to get rid of it. All in a half hour is quite a leap to take, but kind of had to take the leap.
Yeah, it gets it out of the way and gets to the meat of the movie.
I mean, maybe they could have taken out some of the stuff on Vulcan.
Mm.
You know, maybe it could have just began with them departing Vulcan.
It was a nice Bones rant, though.
The whole, how do you feel thing.
Mm. Hearing Bones rant about the Vulcan ship was great, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's all he really had in this. Mm-hmm. He had so very little. They really underused him.
Well, he had the one clutch moment toward the end, and then a lot of ranting.
Yeah, he had his rant about 20th century medicine, of course. But yeah, it's now that I see this, and I think this is the first time seeing this since seeing some of the Abrams movies. I kind of feel that Abrams had been underusing him too, but they were doing it back here. Anyway, so they figure all this out in just half an hour, take this leap, and I guess the one thing that I can't really forgive them is just the normalization of time travel.
Well, yeah, just I'll be commenting on the time travel later.
Right. We'll just fly near the sun. Uh-huh. Check, check, check. All right.
Slightly then, less silly than Superman flying around the Earth in reverse.
Oh, that's way less silly than that. I mean, that's cartoonish. This is just this bad is sci-fi.
Still fairly cartoonish, actually.
This is you know, more of the. I mean, you could kind of see what they were trying to get at, but yeah. It's still pretty bad. But come on, spinning the Earth in the other direction, what's that going to do?
That's why Primer was the best example of time travel, because it was a complete black box.
Yes.
He didn't even try to explain anything.
We should have talked about that top 30 article, but anyway. Mm-hmm. So they just pop back in time. Spock hits... Now, getting back to a time where there were whales alive, not that difficult a thing to do if you think mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah.
I mean, but the return trip is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a window of how many thousands, mm-hmm. okay, millions of years where they could swipe a whale mm-hmm. or two.
Right.
You know, fine.
And you have about 5 minutes that they actually got back to the exact moment.
Yes,
they left.
They got back to the moment they left. Spoiler alert, they get back to the exact moment they left.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
Anyway, these are all things that they were just pretty much afterthoughts, obviously.
And I won't even get into the whole timeline thing.
Because the main purpose of this movie is to set them loose in San Francisco.
Right.
And all of that aforementioned was just an excuse to get them in to San Francisco. Now, they did a few episodes of the original series where they went to different times
right.
in the U.S., of course. Why would they visit any other country? one of them being in the 60s where they were... Where they had to, I forgot what they had to do with a rocket launch. I think it was stop a rocket launch. And another one being pre-World War II. But this, yes, they now visit the Earth for a third time in the past. Only this time it is 20 years. Yeah, 20 years later mm-hmm. in 1986. So they get split up through their missions. They need one person to, well, one team needs to assess the whales that they're going to steal. One team needs to build the
enclosure, tank, the tank.
The tank that they're going to keep the whales in. And another team needs to swipe some energy to get the hell out of there.
Because in the crash landing, they damaged the propulsion on the Klingon ship.
And
they're still in the bird of prey that they stole the last time.
Which is great. I mean, continuity-wise, they mm-hmm. were still in there. They left it. I mean, it was kind of an excuse for how they were avoided the entire attack and all that.
Yeah.
But, yes, so they run amok through San Francisco and...
lots of road comedy.
Lots of road comedy, even a bit in a hospital with mm-hmm. where they're pretending to be surgeons, and hilarity ensues.
Mm-hmm. And this movie was, well, dated in a lot of ways, but particularly in that it went right to the opening credits. It's been ages since I've seen a movie just hit you with the opening credits, not try to be clever about it.
An overture for a movie seems even weird for a 1986 movie, mm-hmm. but maybe that could just be, you know, current sensibilities. Mm-hmm. Nobody does that anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But well, it struck me as odd.
Yeah. And also odd, particularly in a Star Trek movie where, you know, the franchise is not known for its acting. The hearing scene with the Klingons was really Shakespearean. And the actor who played the lead Klingon, I recognize him. I can't name him, but he's done a ton of other things. He's one of those character actors. You know him by face, but not by name.
The one place where they wind up lacking consistency in the future movie is the president of the Federation is completely different. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't know if this guy's term was up or anything, but the future president of the Federation is none other than the guy that plays Red on That 70s Show.
Was that him?
Not this one.
Oh, okay.
But the ones, I think in 5 and 6.
Oh, okay. I can't think of his name now.
And he has the Fu Manchu and the long white hair that the one crewman had in one of the ships.
And what is it with robes in sci-fi? People apparently just decided they wanted to wear robes at some point in the future.
I mean, the uniforms in these motion pictures never made any sense.
Well, just the military uniforms I've always been, you know, okay with. It's the people walking around who in robes when they're not in uniform. And it's kind of a pervasive thing in sci-fi that I've never quite understood.
Isn't that the uniform?
Oh, it could be another uniform, yeah, because they were the state officials, yeah.
As I say, are you talking about the Vulcans?
Oh, no, also when they get to the trial and the stuff on Earth, too. There's a lot of robes. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Lots of robes. I guess people just want to be comfortable.
Yeah, I guess. I suppose it is comfortable. Speaking of Vulcan,
what?
It seems awfully, the planet, I mean, it seems awfully underdeveloped for the technology level they have.
You would think.
Yeah, there's a lot of desert, a lot of huts, but they have this amazing technology. Also, Spock has a line where he says that Vulcans don't understand feelings, or maybe it was his mother who said it. Isn't the whole point of being a Vulcan controlling your emotions?
Very true.
It's what I've always appreciated about the Vulcans. If Spock has been one of my favorite characters in science fiction for that reason.
That was, I think that's a very early part of the story, too.
Mm, that's the whole Ponfar thing, and their whole history is, you know, they started off as this animalistic, warlike race.
They get more into that in the next movie, actually.
And, you know, over time they learn to control their emotions, and that's become a major part of being a Vulcan, is learning to control all of that. Although, one thing I have to give this credit for on a science fiction level, and everybody says, you know, Star Trek is the real sci-fi franchise as opposed to Star Wars. I have yet to see that really bear out, for the most part.
Because this was pretty much fantasy more than science fiction.
But it is one of the earliest references to solar cells that I've heard.
Oh, yeah.
So that was impressive. One of the other things that the probe does is it zaps a ship of its energy. And so when it happens to this one ship, the one that first discovers it, they mention that one of the crewmen is designing a solar cell to keep them alive, you know, to keep the systems on the ship running.
Right. Well, I think back to, like, the Victorian idea of space travel, where they saw it as ships with sails going through solar winds.
Well, no, a solar sail is actually a thing. Some of our long-distance probes have them. They collect, electromagnetic energy to power the ship or the craft.
Yeah, it's kind of neat that they actually weren't that far off, even though they had no idea what they were talking about. I mean, lucky guess. I don't know.
Speaking of being not that far off, in the movie, Scotty helps Dr. Nichols invent transparent aluminum, which in real life became possible 23 years later in 2009. It was developed in part by Professor Justin Wark of Oxford University's Department of Physics.
Now, wouldn't it have been awesome if, when they came back, the president of the Federation was changed to, like, a descendant of the guy they gave that to?
Yes.
Just to see that they fucked with the timeline.
Well, or some reference to things being different now.
Right.
Because, I mean, okay, time travel has yet to be invented. We can get into debates about whether or not it will. But it has yet to be, of course. And the prevailing theory is you don't come back to the same timeline you leave.
Right. Something like the smallest thing is going to change. I mean, they even covered that in fucking Back to the Future, yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, one sports almanac changed the entire world.
Right. But they come back to the exact same timeline they left, in the exact same moment, in this insane slingshot around the sun idea that they barely had enough power to pull off. Yet they time it just perfectly.
With so much additional weight and
yeah, yeah, you know, with two wells and a tank, giant right. tank full of water.
And you know what? They were acting like that was an unusual thing of transporting that kind of volume. We've colonized space.
Mm-hmm.
We've built shit yeah. out in the middle of nowhere. How do they think building materials
get to would space. Be
transported from one place to another?
Well, it is Star Trek. They have replicators.
Ah, but wouldn't you have to get the matter from somewhere? You'd
have to get the raw materials, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be that crazy of a thing to be transporting that much tonnage.
Hmm.
I mean, they're not new space travelers.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. Although the time travel graphics, as cheesy as they were, reminded me a bit of Black Rainbow. I think Black Rainbow borrowed a little bit of it.
I mean, it was the whole, like, 80s rock video kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you have these gray figures kind of coming out of this, you know, fluid and, you know, the gray figures of the crewman. And it really kind of reminded me of Black Rainbow when he went into the ooze.
Well,
it's been a while. Yeah,
you know, we probably did talk about this movie.
Well, you might have brought it up. Yeah, you know, I certainly didn't talk about it because I hadn't seen it in like 30 years.
But yeah, it was ridiculous. And then ending with like the close up of the whale stuff floating in space.
Yes.
Like I was looking for the flower pot
or the Star Child.
Oh.
One thing I did get a kick out of though was Bones trying to get to know Spock on the bridge. He's basically just saying, like, how have you been, you know, just trying to, you know, basically catch up with him since, you know, Spock's no longer in his head.
Try a curiosity about what it's like to be dead.
Yeah, yeah, that was a big part of it, too, yeah.
I think, which you could definitely see McCoy wanting to know about.
Well, he's a doctor, so it does make sense.
Well, everything's about cheating death, which they even get into in the next one as well.
Yes. Oh, speaking of things that reminded me of other movies. The scene when the bird of prey lands in San Francisco and it kicks up all of this, you know, wind, which I did like the fact that it takes off and lands with propulsion, not some kind of anti-grav. That was nice.
Yeah.
But you have these two garbage men at a truck and they're kind of holding on to the truck to not get blown away. Reminded me of Sharknado 3 right before Nova shows up.
And they're talking like they're from Brooklyn, even though it's San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what? Hey, what are you saying?
Although, when they get to San Francisco, the street clothes did seem a little out of place, of the crew, specifically Bones, Sulu, and Chekhov.
Of course.
And they didn't seem futuristic. They really kind of seemed very 70s.
Yeah.
You know, if they tried to make them look futuristic, you know, Silver Lame and all that, that's one thing. But they looked very 70s. Speaking of Sulu, okay, George Takei didn't come out till like 2006.
Right.
But I swear in these movies, they're trying to suggest that Sulu was gay.
How so?
His general demeanor and I guess a lot of the costuming and maybe a lot of it was what Takei brought to the role. But I don't know, every time he talks to somebody who's not a crewman of the Enterprise, he just seems very gay.
I guess you could say it looked like he might have been flirting a bit with the other helicopter pilot.
Particularly in this case. I think that's why it struck me this time. Yeah, but I've noticed it in other movies too. The jail scene in 3. He also appeared to be flirting.
True. You know, in Generations, they I don't think he's in it, but he has a daughter.
Oh, okay. It's been ages since I've seen any of the Star Trek movies, other than the ones we've already reviewed. Now, the scene on the bus with the punk. Watching it again, I kind of feel bad for him because I liked the song.
No.
I actually did like the song. I mean, it's straightforward, you know, simple punk, but I dug it.
Well, it's kind of a knockoff of either Bodies or Oh, it's the other Sex Pistols song. I can't remember now.
Yeah, okay. Good point. Good point.
I'm thinking mostly Bodies. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's another Sex Pistols song I was trying to think of that.
I was enjoying it, and then Kirk put the Nerf Pinch on, or Spock put the Nerf Pinch on and knocked him out. Yeah, yeah. Now, also, there's a reference to Jacqueline Suzanne and Harold Robbins being classics of the age.
Yes.
A cheap joke, but very funny.
This plays much better as in just hindsight. A comedy.
Yeah. I also think in hindsight, you know, a couple of, you know, decades after it takes place.
Right, right. But the humor of this movie is really what saves the day definitely, more than definitely. Anything else. Yeah.
This would not have worked as a straight drama at all.
No, this would have been a disaster if this was just a straight up drama. But just what's winning, what's getting brains for me, just the relationship between Kirk and Spock.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even the end with the marine biologist.
Yeah. She was kind of bland up until they kind of start to let her in on what's going on.
Right. But I guess it was something I hadn't noticed like originally watching it, but just the shock Kirk has at the end, and spoiler alert, but that he does not get to fuck her.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just something I hadn't put two and two together on until watching it this time around. He's just blown away that she kind of leaves him hanging in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wait, you're not even going to hang around with him? I brought you into this.
This one was very self-aware of the tropes of the show.
Yeah, it was.
Another bit of great comedy, which I completely remembered, completely saw coming, but it still got me, was when Scotty tried talking into the mouse, into the computer mouse.
Oh, you kidding? I just got like that, you know, Comcast thing with the voice activated remote, and I still like just hit the button and go, computer on.
But he picks up the mouse, and it's this old school, you know, IBM square mouse. Actually, well, I don't know. I think it was a Mac mouse. The guts of the computer were IBM. Yeah. And he just tries talking into it, and it looks like a handheld, you know, radio.
Well, at first he's trying to just talk to the computer.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they Bones hand him points mouse, out
the mouse.
And then so he takes the mouse and starts talking into the mouse. Mm-hmm. Oh, if say we went or kids today would go back into the past.
Mm-hmm.
Would they know what to do if they had a rotary phone?
That's a very good point.
Like, if we went back into the past and we know everything there is to know about cars, but if we were presented with a Model T,
yeah, we wouldn't be able to get it started.
Crank the fucker started.
I saw that on Top Gear. They tried to get these old, you know, original first cars started, and it's not like driving a modern car.
All right, so Scotty knows everything there is to know about computers and engineering and shit.
Right.
But if he were presented with the keyboard and right. not yeah. knowing how to use a keyboard, he wouldn't be just flying along like
it. There's a series on YouTube called Kids React, and they show kids technology from like the 70s and 80s. They have no bloody clue what it is.
Right, and nor should they. It's ancient. I always see when those people are posting those memes about the pencil and the cassette tape, like, they, you know, kids don't know what this is. Who gives a fuck?
They don't need to.
Right, nobody needs to know that anymore. It's done, man. Yeah. We had it, and it's gone. And thank God it's gone, really, because who the fuck wants to mess with cassettes anymore?
Yeah. I saw one of those memes where, like, you know, it showed, you know, an Atari was my PlayStation, and all of this was my, you know, yada yada of the time. And it made me so glad that I don't have to deal with that stuff anymore. I remembered most of it, but
you know, I love technology. Back in the day, but I mean, it doesn't quite compare to what we've got now.
Nostalgia's nice and all, but it's better now.
Right, exactly. And believe me, I still, this is a dude who has his Commodore 64 packed away still.
I probably have my Atari 800 XL around here somewhere.
I will someday bring it out of retirement and just, you know, twiddle around on it for a bit. But I mean, it's not going to beat what we've got now.
Right. Now, there was one, getting back to the movie, there was one thing in there that was hilarious, even though I don't know if it was played as a joke, because if it was, it was incredibly esoteric. So there's a scene where, you know, Chekhov gets captured and he's being interrogated by the military.
Yeah.
And the scene itself was basically who's on first.
Yes.
But he tries to get away using his phaser. His phaser doesn't work. It's of malfunctioning. Course. Chekhov's gun didn't work. I don't know if that was intentional. I'd be incredibly impressed if it was, but it's there.
Chekhov was named after Chekhov.
Yeah, true.
That is, you know, that was Roddenberry's point. Yeah, I kind of
got a kick out of Chekhov's gun not working.
But it wasn't introduced in the earlier acts.
Well, no,
really.
It wasn't an example of Chekhov's gun. It was literally Chekhov's gun, and it didn't work.
That's true.
So now, while they're in San Francisco, the bird of prey is cloaked. It's invisible in this park.
Yes.
Except there's this big indentation of the grass that everyone should have been able to see. I don't know how that went unnoticed.
I guess they're implying not many people used the parks in San Francisco in the 1980s.
Perhaps. Oh, by the way, the whales were not actual whales. They were full-size animatronics and small motorized models. Easier to work with than actual whales, I guess, you know, probably smaller. Well, no, smaller because full size. if you don't get the title of this one, I mean, I think everybody listening is about our age.
You just need to read it like this.
Everyone should get it. You're all about our age, I think. But if you don't, look up Fudgy the Whale on YouTube.
Did you see what they've done to Fudgy the Whale these days?
Is Fudgy the Whale still a thing?
They updated him, and he looks like this crazy brown tidy bowl man, Mr. Hanky-ish kind of thing.
Well, they always use that basic shape to do other things with it. You know, there were some alien was basically Fudgy redecorated.
Well, not the cake, but they have like an animated, like a cartoon creature as Fudgy the Whale.
Oh, okay. I don't watch TV, so I don't see commercials.
I don't see, you know, they don't have Carvels out here, so we don't see any Carvel ads. Oh, okay. So I don't know if it's a thing or not.
I'll check YouTube.
I posted it actually a year ago or so. Oh,
I'll make a
big look
for that, but I'll look on YouTube.
Yeah, just look for it online.
Uh-huh. Oh, also, back to the movie. This is the only instance in which Kirk says, "Scotty, beam me up."
Really?
That became such a quote associated with the show, he didn't even say it until the fourth movie.
Wow. And I like that they finally addressed, you know, why they wouldn't curse.
Yes, that was nice.
Throughout the show.
Apparently it has gone out of fashion by the 23rd century. Or at least, See, this is my issue with Star Trek.
What?
It's so pristine, and there's this whole world peace thing. It's not lived in. There's no gutter, you know?
They don't get to explore a gutter until Deep Space Nine, really.
Well, yeah, that's true. There's a gutter in DS9. Maybe that's why I always kind of like DS9. Profanity is never going to disappear. I don't care how much we advance, how much we, you know, we could achieve world peace. There's still going to be profanity. That whole thing was just kind of absurd. Though it was a nice a convenient explanation.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, the scientist, Catherine Hicks' character, can't think of the character's name, was originally supposed to be played by Eddie Murphy.
What?
Well, not that role, but Eddie Murphy was originally supposed to be that part of the movie, that you know, archetype in the movie, I guess you could say. He was supposed to play a professor concerned with UFOs who spots the decloaking Klingon warship at the Super Bowl.
What?
When everybody else was convinced it was a special effect, he knew it was real. Paramount declined the script for two reasons. This was in the original script. They didn't want to combine their two most profitable franchises, Trek and Beverly Hills Cop, and Murphy was signed on to do The Golden Child. So The Golden Child, as bad as it was, saved us from Eddie Murphy being in this movie.
I don't know. That might have been... That would have been weird.
I don't know.
I've never heard that before.
It was way before Murphy jumped the shark, but I still don't think he would have fit in this movie.
I can't wrap my head around it. Eddie Murphy in a Star Trek movie?
Mm-hmm.
That is mind-blowing. That's... Mm-hmm. I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah. Oh, also, the captain of the U.S. Saratoga seen early in the film, first female captain seen in Star Trek history, And what caused them to give the green light to Voyager.
Huh.
So Voyager was under development long before it actually aired, somewhere in the late 90s. I don't remember exactly when it started.
Really? They were bringing Voyager all the way back?
Well, this was the initial, like, go ahead and do that. So this was the first step to creating Voyager.
They knew, I mean, Roddenberry wanted to do it even earlier.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a matter of getting it past the powers that be.
Yeah. I mean, people say, oh, look what he did with his final casting. But originally, remember, before Kirk, he wanted a woman first officer. You know, the pilot with Chris Pike.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and that's probably why we saw Savick for two movies and change.
Who actually he referred to his first in command as number one. Like, he wound up doing with Picard.
Right, right. Now, of course, they get back to the exact moment in time when they left.
Yes.
Again, amazing.
Yes. I mean, think about it. Usually with a time machine movie, you know, you have like an exact time thing you can program it to get
right.
It. This is just them fucking slingshotting around the sun.
Yeah, yeah. Exact Boom. Moment. And
like, what?
And okay, so the plan, at least as Kirk mentions, is for the two wells that they brought back to repopulate the species.
Yeah.
How do two individuals repopulate a species?
They keep really busy.
Uh-huh. And okay, so they crash into the San Francisco Bay. Bird of Prey is sinking. Of course, they have to get the wells out, and all the crew has to survive. And, you know, Kirk goes back to clear the wells and to save the scientist and Scotty.
Yeah,
gets out in the nick of time, apparently can hold his breath for an amazingly long period of time.
I thought that at first. I was like, yeah, I guess it wasn't that long.
Yeah, maybe not.
It seems very long, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it was.
It's negligible. It's not something that, you know, it's really... I'm really going to nitpick. I just thought it was funny.
Once you slingshot it around the sun and wind up to the exact
same place
you left, you know, it's out the window, mm-hmm. man.
And he's wondering why the wells that have just been released aren't singing back to the probe. When they've established that, they are not going to understand the probe until they're underwater.
I would have liked if it wasn't actually for the whales after all, and they just did all that for nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just some other dumb thing. Oh, it's looking for this.
I did like...
just left in the bay going, what the fuck did we just do?
I did like that they left the origins of the purpose of the probe up to speculation. You know, yes, the whales dispatch with it, but they don't tell you who it was from. You know, maybe it was an advanced species of sentient whales that sent a probe, you know, tried to see if, you know, their ancestors were still on this planet. Who knows?
I mean, me personally, I welcome our new whale overlords.
And the Bird of Prey stayed afloat for a really long period of time. They climb out of the Bird of Prey and they're kind of sitting on the ship as it's sinking. And it stayed up for a really long period of time.
I'm trying to think of how deep the bay would be.
You could tread water in the bay, of course. You know, they're military, except for the scientists. You might have an issue. But the Bird of Prey sinking would tend to pull you in with it.
Yeah, it would.
And so, of course, you know, they get rescued. Kirk is reduced to a captain, so, you know, reboot.
Rabbit in the briar patch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're given the new Enterprise. Shouldn't it have been the Enterprise B?
Because I don't think there was an A.
Oh, okay. So it was one. There was no letter on the first one, so this was
yeah.
A. Okay.
And I think they just chuck this anyway in the next movie, and it's a completely different looking ship.
Uh-huh.
So why they bothered doing that without designing a new ship?
Yeah, yeah.
Beyond me.
And when it goes to warp initially, because of course they have to end with that, you know, scene of it going to warp because it's Star Trek. Red, white, and blue warp shells. A little bit cheesy.
So all they're missing was a transparent Jesus thumbs up. You think?
Pretty much. And then they showed footage of the movie during the closing credits, which was very 80s.
And they were very random scenes. Like them having dinner. Like, wait, why is this a part of, like, oh yeah, I remember that scene where they had dinner. That was wonderful.
I practically could hear the A-Team theme in my head. It was so 80s.
Oh, that's what they should have been playing.
All right, on to sequels and remakes. Well, do we really need to go through sequels and remakes?
Could they make a sequel of this? Okay. If you sequels and remakes, just go back to the episode we did the motion picture.
Yeah, pretty much the same.
It's a lot like that.
Yeah, except it without, you know, 2 and 3, because we've already done those.
I could see us going all the way up to, like, not doing the Abrams movies, but I could see us doing the Next Gen movies too.
All right, we'll see.
We're spreading them out.
On to Brains.
On to Brains.
I really liked it. I think I'm becoming a Star Trek fan. I mean, I still prefer Star Wars by a mile, but I'm really liking the movies. I have to go back and revisit the original series. I'm going 4.
I'm right with you. 4 as well. You know, people might be surprised because I've mostly shat on this movie the entire episode, but the scenes in San Francisco and just the work of Nimoy and Shatner. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Bones. You gotta love them. All of them just really play their parts well for a comedic movie.
And, like I said, it was mostly just Bones ranting, except for that one clutch surgery scene. But I love a good Bones rant.
Yeah.
He's rapidly becoming my favorite character of the original cast.
He's always been my favorite of the original cast. He's always... because he's always the guy that's like, fuck, what are we doing here? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
You know, just the reluctant guy that they drag along that's going to be miserable, but you got to take him along because he's just so handy to have.
Mm. All right, so what have we learned?
That deionization of the atmosphere can happen in seconds.
Mm. And I learned that profanity takes practice. All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing...
Snowpiercer, baby! It's on!
Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, up through Cannibal Woman in the Avocado Jungle of Death. At least that's what we have in order so far. Though that's going to be expanded a little bit. We talked about this yesterday. We have a couple more movies in mind. We've actually picked that up. Yeah, we just picked out episode 300.
Should we announce it now? Or
sure, why not?
Hmm.
Or do you want to leave it a surprise for a while longer?
Let's leave it a surprise for a bit.
Okay, I was probably going to put it on the list after we finish recording anyway, but we'll keep it off for now.
True.
You also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. We have those Jehovah's Witness movies. I think it was it Richard Hawes who left them for us? Well, whoever it was. I don't remember exactly, but thank you for the Jehovah's Witness movies. Awesome. We'll be getting to them probably around Christmas time.
Are they like superheroes or?
No, that would be Bible Man, which is another matter entirely.
Or Orgasmo.
Yeah, which I think was borrowed from Bible Man, or at least influenced by Bible Man.
Hmm.
Anyway, you'll also find the recommendations list, which is... this is the second Star Wars Star Trek movie to make it to this.
Yes.
And I won't apologize for that little flip. this is the second. Yeah, Khan made it as well. 3 didn't quite. At this point, I'm really curious about 5, because I remember hating it, but I'm really enjoying them so far. I've recommended all 3 of them. You know, of course, we won't talk about DMP.
Yeah. They shouldn't even play that in Guantanamo Bay.
You can email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01 or for the alphanumerically challenged.
Fuck yourself with the nuclear wessels.
Nice. 414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.
Can't believe we've come this far only to be stopped by this.
Doing a movie, I guess.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't save it for that, but I mean, if you're okay with me talking about it in the news section, I'll go for it.